Welcome to the Advance Your Art podcast, where we talk about the journey from artist to entrepreneur and everything in between. You've worked hard to hone your craft. Now take it to the next level with tips, techniques, strategies, and routines used by successful artists to grow their businesses and careers. Now, let's get started and have some fun with your host, Yuri Cataldo.
Well, good morning, Willie. Welcome to the podcast.
It's great to be here.
Wonderful. So how are things in Texas this morning?
Things are good. The weather is beautiful. I am facing a big pile of grading that I need to finish as the semester continues to barrel on. But other than that, things are good.
Mm-hmm. That seems like the perpetual professor's life. Grading.
It is.
Waiting. Yeah. So there are a lot of things that you do. You're an artist, a professor, a life and business coach, an entrepreneur. These days, when someone asks you what it is that you do, how do you answer them?
Typically, I would say that I'm an artist and professor, and that's the shortest way I would answer that. Mm-hmm. I teach advertising creativity in the Timberland Advertising Institute at SMU in Dallas. And I am an artist that, as of late, primarily been focused on a long-term art project called We Are All Homeless, which is a project where I've been buying and collecting homeless signs since 1993 and have just completed a documentary about this project and continue to do exhibits and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So let's start from the beginning then. What got you first interested in art and design and particularly advertising?
You know, as a kid, I was one of those kids, I think, that just loved to draw. And I came from a family that I don't think really knew what to do with that because I was the only one that seemed to really like to do that sort of stuff. So I had this interest in drawing and making stuff. And I went into college not really knowing what I wanted to do. In fact, I started in pre-law and then changed my major to math. Mm-hmm. And then trying to really figure out what the heck I wanted to do, I saw advertising design and took my first art class after I was in college for a couple of years and knew immediately that this is where I belonged. I didn't really know much in the beginning about advertising design, but quickly learned a lot about it as an undergrad and loved the kind of the short attention span nature of the business, you know, being able to shift from client to client. Mm-hmm. And of course, just being able to use creativity all of the time and solve problems. Mm-hmm. So I was hooked from the first class.
That's excellent. So were there things that you learned in your classes that helped you later on in your advertising design career, or did you have to figure that the business side of it out more once you finished college?
The thing that I learned in college, which I think prepared me, was just to think on my feet, that advertising was really geared toward people who could think quickly and adapt and stay open. The business side of things, I really didn't learn at all until I began my career and I started, I worked at a variety of design firms and agencies. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I just really paid attention to how the company was run and what seemed to work and what didn't seem to work. So that when I struck out on my own in 1992, my education in business was really based on just observing the places I'd worked.
Okay. Would you mind telling me about the thought process you were thinking and what it was that made you decide to go out on your own?
You know, that's a great question. I think that part of it was just frustration in the ways that some of the places I'd worked, you know, the ways it was run, the excuse me, the frustrations that I had with some of the work that I had to do. And I had this illusion that, you know, having my own company meant I was going to get to do whatever I wanted and it was going to be all rainbows and unicorns, which of course is not the case. But I think part of it was that. And then part of it was I wanted to see if I could do it.
Okay. So how was it, let's say your first year out, how did you find clients? How did you settle into the day-to-days of running a business and being the person in charge?
In the beginning, I had a business partner in the very beginning, and he had been working as a kind of solo freelancer for some time. So he had a few clients, and as it turned out, the agency that I left was really kind of circling the drain. And so some of the clients that I'd worked on there that I had a really good relationship with followed me to this new company. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, we started off having a handful of clients and really had enough to keep us going. And from that point on, it was really about trying to figure out how to get new clients, how to pitch business, and really figuring out how we wanted to grow.
Mm-hmm. So with that process of building the business, is that something you learned on the job? Were there books or people you reached out to help you do that?
Totally on the job. I will say there were definitely people. You know, my first boss in Dallas was a guy named Jack Alday. And, you know, he's to this day still a mentor and a friend to me. There were definitely people that I knew I could call and ask questions of. But I would say the majority of that was really on the job learning and seeing what worked and trusting instincts in some cases and making lots of mistakes.
Oh, of course. That's kind of the on the job kind of thing. So do you think there were, I guess, something different or special that you learned while doing it on the process that you think helped you along the way?
Yeah, I would say there are a number of things. One thing that comes to mind is to really trust my creative instincts was something that I learned that when I had an idea or even an idea for a presentation about how to engage a potential client, to take some risks and to trust those instincts, which I don't think that didn't really come natural to me. I had to fight through my fear in order to do that. And I think really paying attention, you know, from an emotional intelligence standpoint, to really paying attention to relationships and listening to clients, that was another thing that the more I was in business, the more I realized how important it was to really be a good listener and understand what it was that was keeping them up at night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. So you opened it, and then in 2006, did you just decide it wasn't what you wanted to do anymore? What prompted you to get out of the advertising business?
Well, the original partner left the company in 1996, and then I ran the business for the remainder, the following 10 years, basically on my own. And we grew and, of course, weathered 9/11. You know, we went through a variety of things that just had a big impact on not just us, but on business across the country. Mm-hmm. And overall, it was just a completely satisfying experience. I had really great relationships. I made lifelong friends, some of my employees and coworkers. But by the time 2006 came around, it was a combination of things. One was that I had, you know, after 15 years of running the business and creating, you know, all these campaigns and branding and just all the kinds of work that we did. I don't know if bored is the right word, but it wasn't challenging me at a high level, especially from a creative standpoint. The second thing is that because we had grown, I had to promote someone else to take on the role of creative director, and I essentially gave that up and really had to manage the company and work on business development and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I believe in some ways that was another piece of the puzzle that really was the beginning of the end, because the creative was why I got into this in the first place, and I really missed that. The third thing is that this is, you know, the internet was becoming a thing. I was blogging and posting drawings online and starting to connect with communities that were more doing just illustration and art and other kinds of stuff online. And I was really fascinated by that. And I think I saw that my interest was shifting. And the last factor would be that the building that we were in was bought, and I was suddenly faced with the prospect of either signing a new lease or, you know, since I'd already been thinking about this, it just seemed like the universe was giving me a big sign that this was the time. And so I started the process of trying to figure out how to sell the company, and that all worked out. And the timing was just right.
Mm-hmm. Well, wonderful. So with the how to sell the company part, did you work with, is there like a go-between company where you just happen to reach out to other companies? Do you mind talking a little bit about that process?
No, I don't mind talking about that. I was working for many years with a consultant, a guy named David Baker, who's based in Nashville, who I'm still a good friend and somebody I trusted to give me really good advice. He was not afraid to to say stuff I didn't want to hear. Mm-hmm. And so he was a valuable resource for me during that time. And we talked about various strategies. One was obviously to look for a larger agency who wanted to acquire our sort of our portfolio and our contracted clients and so forth. But after going back and forth about the various options, one of the options was to sell it to one of my current employees who I had worked with for, I think, 9 years or so. And she was somebody that I knew could run the company. Even though she was young, I just had confidence that she would really keep it more intact. And there was a part of me that really did care about the culture of the business. And because of the nature of the sellout, the buyout of our lease and so forth, it provided us with enough cushion that I felt comfortable in giving her a long payout and so forth. Mm-hmm. That would enable me to, you know, feel fairly confident that things were going to kind of continue to go well for them. And at the same time, I didn't need a huge payout at that moment that I might have gotten had I gone the route of selling to a big agency. So in the end, that's what I opted to do. And she was terrified, of course, but decided that she was willing to take it on. And that was 10 years ago. And mm-hmm. The company's now called Mason Baronet, and she is still doing a great job of running it.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. It's always nice to see that, you know, the legacy that you've been building up is still alive and well.
It's really a very odd thing too. I often go back for a Thanksgiving potluck or whatever. And of course there are a lot of employees there that I don't really know, but it's fun to get to know them. And then the ones I do know, it's really just rewarding to see them doing so well. And just to have watched, Holly, you know, grow into being such a competent business owner and really taking the company in a great direction.
Mm-hmm. So after you sold that, there's a time, and I got this from your TED talk, where you decided to go back for your MFA and also started this very long kind of installation art project. Can you tell me a little more about your thought process and what made you decide to go back for your MFA and more about your art project?
Sure. There was a period of maybe a year and a half where I was kind of wandering around aimless, trying to figure out what I was going to do. Because, you know, I kept telling myself a big part of the whole reason I was making this change was that I wanted to really get more into art and challenge myself, because I was pretty afraid of even exploring what that meant. And so in some of my early conversations with people, and I started taking a few painting classes and things like that, I realized after talking to one gallery owner in Dallas in particular that I thought going back to school would really challenge me and expose me to stuff that I probably wasn't going to get, you know, taking a class here and there. And so I immediately started the process of looking for a program that I thought would be a good fit. And I at first thought I was going to do a painting MFA, but after discovering this program up at UTD called Arts and Technology, I realized that I was much more interested in a multidisciplinary kind of program where I could do installation stuff and filmmaking and sound design and just, you know, a wide range of stuff, because I have a lot of interests creatively. And, you know, once I went and talked to a couple of the professors there and just felt an immediate connection, and it ended up being really one of the best 3-year periods of my life. I just felt like that time in school just exposed me to so much new stuff, and I really did challenge myself. And so even though I'd been buying the homeless sign since 1993, the truth is, you know, I really didn't know from an art standpoint what I was going to do with those, and had sort of tried a few things, but had never really taken it real seriously. And once I was in grad school, I started to get ideas for installations and ways of creating bodies of art using these signs. And so that's when it really took off. And that's when I coined the phrase "We Are All Homeless," and, you know, bought the URL, mm-hmm. began to do projects and classes and so forth.
Okay. So in the early days, what made you decide to start buying homeless signs?
It was really, I think, a way to just change the dynamic, because I didn't like how I felt when I saw somebody, and I think like a lot of people, I would, you know, avert my eyes or pretend to be fiddling with the radio or whatever. And this was just a chance for me to shift all of that. And from the beginning, I could tell from the beginning that it was just something that was interesting to me. And I started to really become fond of the signs themselves. And once I started, I just never stopped. I mean, I still buy signs today.
Oh, sure. Wow. How many signs did you say that you have right now? Estimate.
I don't know exactly. I think it's probably between 1,200 and 1,300, something like that.
Oh, wow. How? And what year did you start buying signs?
23 years ago.
Wow. So now, how has that project evolved over the years? So what are some things that you're working on it now?
In the very beginning in school, I started to do some various, I mounted signs onto mirrors, and I created some digital compilations of pieces and parts of the signs, and started to create various things to just explore what, you know, the art piece of this was going to become. And then ultimately I started to do installations where I did nothing other than really display the signs in a variety of ways. You know, sometimes that might be on the floor, on the wall, hanging from the ceiling. It a lot depended on the space that I was working with. Mm-hmm. And those became bigger and bigger, and all of that led to a TEDx talk that I did in 2012, where I really talked about this project and that's when I first mentioned that one day I wanted to travel across the country buying signs. And that led to a trip in 2014 with a documentary film crew from Seattle to San Diego to New York, a 31-day trip. And that really, you know, began to accelerate the exposure of this project, because we got quite a bit of media attention on that cross-country trip. And that all led to the long process of editing the documentary, which we actually just re-edited. It premiered at a film festival in Dallas in May of this year, and then it's been in a total of 5 festivals so far, but we just re-edited it to tighten it up, and so it's a little bit shorter and I think a lot stronger. And so moving forward, we're literally in the process now, because I continue to get invited to do installations at, in various cities and different kinds of locations, and sometimes get invited to speak about the project. And so we're in the process now of trying to figure out a strategic plan for what we're calling the impact campaign, and just how to move this forward in a really effective way, try to figure out how it should be organized, what kind of, you know, we're going to try to hire somebody to head up the administrative aspects of things, because that is not one of my strengths, and fundraising. And we've got a relationship with a nonprofit here in Dallas. So it's just a matter now of trying to organize all of this and figure out how to take it forward so that we can really have the most impact as we can.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that sounds like an amazing project. Is there – I'm sorry, you mentioned we were previously talking that you are going to be doing an installation in New York. How did how did that happen? And what? And can you tell me more about that?
One of the things that happened, I mentioned we get a fair amount of media coverage, you know, going across the country, you know, including, you know, an interview on All Things Considered on NPR and a few other national media outlets. And that led to a short video about this project being produced and uploaded by a website called Hooplaha, which was then picked up by another website called Upworthy. And when Upworthy put it on their Facebook page, it's now been viewed over 7 million times and shared, I think, over 100,000 times. The impact of that has been that I've gotten lots of messages, as you might expect, and comments from all over the world. And the woman who wrote the play in New York, that which is where this installation is going to be in October, basically saw that online and contacted me, and we started a conversation, and that's how that came about. And that's frankly how a lot of installations over the past year have come about as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. It's great that your positive message is getting out there more and more and more. So there's a lot of things you've done that I would say take you out of your comfort zone. How do you, when you approach something new, like a new project, or, you know, starting over, like you went from your agency to then jumping in and starting this art project, are there certain things or certain ways that you approach the uncertainty or fear that help you get through that?
I think the longer I'm alive, I have learned to, you know, and this, there are a lot of things that contribute to this. And one of those things has been the relationship with my dad, for instance, which I think I worked on in therapy for a long time. And, there were a couple of big fears I faced with him and confronting him about some issues we had when I was growing up and wanting to kind of forge a better relationship. And that was probably the most terrifying thing I've ever done personally. But it's things like that, that, you know, with each time that I face a fear or really push through a fear, I think that it just gives me a little bit more confidence that fear is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, I believe that it's important for me to honor the fear when it comes up and to kind of give it the respect it deserves. It's usually there because it's trying to tell me something about moving forward. And so honoring the fear and paying attention to it, not trying to pretend it doesn't exist, but then really, you know, taking a deep breath, figuring out what is it I need to do in terms of what I want to make happen, what's good for me, what's good for the people around me. And then if that means pushing forward through it, then push through it. And knowing that sometimes I may fail, sometimes I'm going to, you know, it's going to be keep me up at night, mm-hmm. whatever that might be. But it is it's a process. And I think for a lot of people, it's one that the more I do it, the more confident I get, the more aware that, you know, it's probably not going to kill me. So mm-hmm. let's see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you say that there are rituals or routines that you do or have done that help you either, you know, now setting up projects or in the past have helped you get through things?
Oh, certainly. Some of them I don't necessarily do every day, but there's things that I try to just make a regular kind of part of my routine. And drawing is one of those that I still use drawing and sketchbooks as a way to process things. If I'm pissed off about something, I might do a drawing about it but it's a way to sort of just reset. The simple things like taking a deep breath can be a huge thing. Mm-hmm. When I'm confronting an issue with another person, taking a little bit of time and really trying to understand the pain that the other person might be coming from, you know, trying to be as compassionate as I can be, exercising, doing the mundane things like taking care of myself is, believe it or not, really important. Not to mention, you know, a good workout gets the endorphins going. Mm-hmm. Laughing, spending time with people I love and trust, and even seeking out advice when I need to. You know, running an idea by someone else for me is a ritual that is very helpful, mm-hmm. because it's easy for me to get wound up in my own brain, and talking to other people is often a good way to check that out. Mm-hmm.
So as a professor, you spend a lot of time with, you know, the next generation of designers and artists. Are there certain things that is there advice that you regularly give them or certain avenues you steer them in that help them, you know, make sure that they're more secure in their future?
Yes, they would probably tell you ad nauseum that I do that. but I mean, some of the key things, you know, one's about the facing fear. Another is to just simply work really hard and give yourself a lot of chances to fail, because most creative endeavors are repetitive processes, and it's always about improving. I've got students right now working on TV campaigns in a portfolio class, and they are editing and re-editing and, you know, tweaking the timing and the pacing. And the same is true for those that are working on print-oriented projects, where they are doing typography and designing layouts and compositions that, you know, trying a lot of things, seeing what works, seeing what doesn't work, being able to compare. And I also encourage them to be bold, you know, that I really stress that take some chances, do something that's going to freak somebody out and go too far so that you can see how far is the right amount to go. Mm-hmm. Study and look at other great work. Build your just sort of your internal encyclopedia of all of the good work that's out there and the compelling creative work, and look at it and study it, break it down, figure out why it works, try to understand what makes it so compelling to other people. So I feel like a lot of it's pretty basic stuff about the creative process, but it's important, and it's easy to forget some of that. When I get stuck, it's easy to forget. So I try to remind them there are tools and techniques they can do to get unstuck.
Oh yeah. No, I think it's wonderful advice. I know that when I was going through art schools, I kind of wish that I had more professors who would give out, you know, even though it seems obvious now, but it at the time definitely wasn't obvious to me. So that's great. What would you say is the best advice you have ever received?
Probably to be myself, to trust myself, and not be too overly concerned with making everybody else happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually really, really powerful. Wonderful.
Took me a long time to really embrace it.
I bet. So thank you so much, Willie. This has been wonderful. If the listeners would like to get a hold of you and see what your next project is and more of what you're doing, what's the best way they can do that?
A couple of things. WeAreAllHomeless.org, SignsOfHumanity.org, or find me, Willie Baronet, on Instagram or Facebook, and we also have a We Are All Homeless group and page on Facebook as well. Those are probably the best ways.
Okay, great. And I will put a link in the show notes. And then the event you were speaking of earlier, the play in conjunction with your art installation, when does that go up?
The installation is going to happen about October 28th. I believe the play, the official run of the play begins on October 29th at the Tada Theater in New York. It's, I can't remember the address, but the play is called Roughly Speaking, and it's about the voices of the soup kitchen.
Wonderful. All right, and I will put more information in that also in the show notes.
Great.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time, Willie. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Yuri. Take care.
Thank you. You too. Thank you for listening to the Advance Your Art podcast. If you truly enjoy this, please head over to iTunes and download additional interviews, as well as hit the subscribe button so that as new episodes come out, they will automatically go to your phone. Also, while you're there, please give us a 5-star rating, which helps our iTunes rankings. If you'd like to see more information, head on over to advanceyourart.com, where you can find information about each of the guests, as well as projects that I am working on. And always, if you're in the Boston area, please feel free to reach out. I can be found on Twitter at YCataldo, or you can email me, Yuri@advanceyourart.com. Thank you so much and have a great day.